Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
It's our Monday morning house call from the Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital, Dr. Kevin Most. Good morning, Doc. Hope you had a nice holiday weekend. And do you remember when you're a kid and it's really cold out like today and your mom has to remind you to wear your jacket because you just don't get cold? But as we get older, that changes, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does, Bob. And days like today are just going to be reminders for that. And we have to realize, yeah, well, we're little kids. You know, a couple things going for us. Not little kids, but, you know, say young adults and teenagers and adolescents. We have a lot of muscle mass. We have a lot of fat. We have great circulation. All the things that help us maintain our heat. So going out today with a light coat on, you know, that is temporizing. For seniors, though, it's not, you know, because as we age, our skin is a lot thinner, so it loses heat a lot easier. We have less fat. We don't have as much muscle mass. So there's many reasons why, as we age, we feel colder. So that senior who's wearing a sweater, there's reasons for it. It's not like, oh, why should you be so cold? You know, it's not that cold. Our circulation isn't as robust. So when you think about that as you age, know that that's a normal part of aging, is why we feel colder as we age.
But you have more fat as you get older, or maybe that's just after Thanksgiving. I don't know. But so you're saying that that fat actually works differently when you're older, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like insulation in your house. So certainly that, you know, the fat will help you maintain some body heat. But, you know, probably the bigger thing instead of fat is try to stay active as much as you can. Try to keep your muscle mass up because we know that as we use muscles, it generates heat, and, again, it'll keep us warm. So doing things like light weightlifting, you know, things walking, things that are going to keep your muscle mass up instead of having a sedentary lifestyle where you lose muscle mass, because the skin is going to thin as we age, we know that, and our circulation certainly is not going to be as robust as it was in our prime, whether it's due to diabetes or just, you know, the fragility of our blood vessels. So certainly trying to maintain that as much as you can is not only good for your health and your heart, but also to keep you a little bit warmer this winter.
It's very interesting. I was reading about this, the importance of water. You think in the summer, you're sweating, you're thirsty, it's so important to drink water, but actually that plays a part in keeping you warm too, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely it does. You know, water keeps the cells full. You know, we don't understand that. We think water, what does it really do? But really, to keep water does a couple things. One, it keeps us well hydrated, obviously. It keeps us well lubricated, so it allows our joints to move and move more easily. And then it also keeps our cells, get all the way down to the microscopic point of it, full, which again maintains body heat as well.
Let's talk about colds in the winter and the real reason why there are more of them. It has to do with viruses, doesn't it?
Well, it's really interesting. You know, influenza is a virus we know that survives well in the cold. That's why we have flu season in the cold. I think what's actually more fascinating is when you look at, people look at our nose and go, you know, all right, it's a nose, what does it do? It tells us when we're around good food, tells us when we're around something that smells bad. But actually, it really is so important for our immune system, mainly because many viruses come in through our nose. And the nose has cells in there that say, hey, wait, you're not supposed to be here, and they turn on our immune system. But what we have found, and researchers have just found recently, is that as it gets colder, if it drops 10 degrees, 50% of the cells in our nose actually don't work. They kind of die off. So really important that when we're outside, we try to protect our nose as much as we can, not only for the cold and frostbite, but also for our immune system.
So when mom bundled us up, what she should have been doing is just wrapping a scarf around our face, because that's the key, isn't it?
Absolutely. And think about it. During COVID, what happened during COVID? Our influenza numbers dropped dramatically. Was it because of the mask? Because all the scientists were telling you, hey, you know, the mask didn't stop all the viruses from going through, but it decreased us touching our face. Certainly it did, but it also kept our noses warm. So it's kind of fascinating when you stop and think about something as simple as your nose and how important it is for your immune system and how important it is to keep your nose warm. So to keep those cells that are going to help fight off infections present.
Let's talk a little bit about gastroesophageal reflux disease. This is not just a problem after pigging out on Thanksgiving, is it?
No, it really isn't, Bob. But a lot of people probably did have it this past weekend. But it's a very common problem that's found. Many people have it. And it's, you know, that acid stomach burn when you lay down, often when you're laying in bed, and all of a sudden you just have this acidy burning sensation there. And that's because we have acid in our stomach, and the lining of the stomach is easily built to hold on to and take care of acid at the level that it is, at the pH that it is, which is the strongest acid that we know of. But unfortunately, the esophagus, the tube that leads to the stomach, doesn't have that same lining. So anytime any of that acid leaves the stomach and goes up into the esophagus, you get that discomfort. But we know that there are many things that can do it. We know that there's trigger foods. People probably even know, oh, if I eat chocolate, I know I'm going to get reflux. If I eat tomato sauce, I know. If I eat spicy food, if I drink too much. So there are trigger foods. So really, staying away from your trigger food is one way to stop it. Another way to stop it is eat smaller meals and make sure that you eat early enough so that you're not going to bed immediately after dinner where your stomach is full and hasn't had the opportunity to empty.
There's a thought that it's all about spicy foods, but really, when you talk about trigger foods, it's much more than just that, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It can be fatty foods, you know, so really a lot of people who maybe cook with oil and butter, the fat in that can cause it. So really it's try to identify what trigger food you have and then to minimize that at a certain time of the day. So for you, if it is spicy foods, have your spicy foods at lunch. But it's not just spicy foods. It can be almost anything. And like I said, tomatoes are a big one for it, chocolates. And again, staying away from fatty foods late at night is going to be a really good idea for you.
And you suggest eating smaller meals throughout the day?
Yeah. Frequent small meals allows the stomach to empty. Now, there are many other things. We're just talking about the food. Maintaining a healthy weight. You know, we know that people who are overweight have higher incidence of this. People who smoke, so try to not, you know, decrease your smoking or stop smoking. And then there's ways, you know, we can elevate the head of the bed a little bit that will keep the acid in the stomach. Eat earlier in the day, like I said, so that you're not going to bed right after eating a full meal. Sleeping on your left side. So these are all things that can help with that, besides using medications, which we know will help as well.
And you want to deal with this before it gets serious, because it can, can't it?
Absolutely. People who have chronic reflux, where they get this chronically, that lower esophagus can only get attacked by acid so much before bad things happen to the cell, which includes esophageal cancer. So certainly, you know, it's not just this benign thing, oh, take a couple Tums and it'll go away. If you have this on a regular basis, certainly see your doctor to talk about it, because there's other treatments for it. There's some surgical treatments as well. And certainly having Tums, using Tums when needed. But if you're taking Tums every night, definitely talk to your doctor. Let the gastroenterologist, the stomach doctor, put a scope down there and take a look to make sure that the cells right there at that junction of the stomach and the esophagus still look healthy.
Seems like every week we hear about red wine. Is it healthy? Isn't it healthy? But there's some new research, new information on headaches in red wine. What do we know about this?
Yeah, and like you started the question, you know, we know that red wine is healthy, right? It decreases our blood pressure, it decreases plaque buildup in our heart, decreases our risk of cancer, decreases our risk of Alzheimer's, diabetes, increases good cholesterol. You say, oh my gosh, it does all these good things. Why aren't we all drinking wine? Well, unfortunately, there's a subgroup of people who get headaches after drinking even a small amount of wine, a glass or two. And we used to think that it was from the sulfites, the preservative that was in the red wine, that would cause this. But in fact, now with a study out of the University of California showed that one of the flavanols, which are antioxidants, which are the good things in red wine, actually some people don't break those down, and it decreases the ability to break them down. You get to toxic levels, and it causes a headache. And this is certainly more common in individuals who already have headaches or have a history of migraines. But I would say to people who take red wine, you know, continue to do it if you like it, because it does help you. And it's interesting, people say, well, maybe if it's the red wine that's causing it, I'll drink the white wine and still get the health benefits. But people have to understand that that's not true. The antioxidants found in red wine are from the skin, which is used during the fermentation process of red wines, whereas it's removed from the white wines. So you don't get those antioxidants and all those health benefits that you normally get with red wine.
That's why I stick to root beer floats, Doc. I appreciate the information, as always, and we'll talk to you.
Make sure it's diet root beer.
Okay, thank you. Have a good week. Thank you.
You take care, Bob.